What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Lattermost, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer at HowStuffWorks.com. And, you know, I think we all love stories of science getting it right and scientists, you know, really nailing something with their experiments and inventions. You know, it gives us, you know, everything from, you know, penicillin to, you know, robots that can tell us what wine to have with dinner, you know, that kind of stuff.
Indeed, yeah. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I mean, you know,
the wine loving robot, yeah. Always a crowd pleaser.
Yeah, in Japan. But, you know, we love stories where science works, but I also really love these stories where science really ends up just on a winding goat path to nowhere. And one of my favorite examples of this, at least that I've discovered in the last year or so, comes to us courtesy of Yorkshire's George Merriweather.
Okay.
And this is back in the 1800s. He invented this thing called the Tempest Prognosticator.
That is a pretty fancy title.
Yeah, and I've seen some photographs of some replicas of it. It basically looked like a steampunk merry-go-round, all right? You know, it's very Victorian era kind of an invention. You know, it's the 1850s, 1851 actually. And except instead of little wooden animals to ride on in this little miniature carousel deal, there were little glass bottles, and each one had a leech in it. A nice little, you know, fat, blood-sucking, slug-type worm creature. You
that
know?
Doesn't sound very merry to me, Robert.
Well, it was on display at the World's Fair and the great exhibition at London's Crystal Palace.
Okay.
And the whole purpose of this was it was a barometer, essentially. Of course, a barometer is the device
a leech barometer.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course, a barometer, the whole deal is, you know, it's for atmospheric pressure and all. And,
sure.
And atmospheric pressure is one of the key indicators of what the weather's going to do.
And how do leeches enter into this whole equation?
Well, apparently there's like this, you know, there are all these folk tales about like, oh, if you go outside and you see a woolly worm halfway up a trunk, it means there's going to be a tornado. You know, there's all, you know, that kind of stuff. And apparently there was like some sort of folk tradition about leeches being able to.
Leeches as meteorologists.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess it's kind of like you're in a time when there's a lot of enthusiasm about science, and sometimes science gets mixed up with some thoroughly unscientific ideas.
Sure,
like this.
Sure.
And so this idea emerged that leeches could sense electromagnetic changes in the atmosphere.
It's pretty advanced of them.
So naturally, what you do is you build a little carousel type device with all these, with these 12 glass vials. Each one has a little little leech in it.
Okay.
And if they, the idea is that the leeches will sense this change in the air and they'll start crawling up the tube to get to an escape area. All right. And if they go up, then they will they'll trigger this little hammer that'll ring a bell, which will let the owner of the Tempest prognosticator know that some bad weather's coming his way.
Okay, so a couple of things here about the Tempest prognosticator.
You have a few problems with this technology.
Okay, what if you have an outlier leech who really just likes to climb up the tube, you know, and get cozy up there, maybe take a little leech nap or whatever? And then how do you figure out, like, is it 6 out of the 12 leeches or 8 of the 12, or do all 12 leeches have to crawl up and you know, hit the hammer and sound the bell? How does this work? And what if leeches are influencing one another's behavior? Like, one leech crawls up, then, oh, that guy's going up, he must know something, so I'm going to go up too. I mean, how does this all work?
Yeah, I think you're clearly thinking about it more than the guy who invented it. Like these are some questions he should have been asking. But the interesting thing about it is you can actually see a working replica of this at a barometer exhibition in Devon, England.
Okay.
And then there's also one at the Whitby Museum in North Yorkshire. So anyway, I was really fascinated. That comes courtesy of Mark Siddall's excellent leech blog, Bedelania, which apparently means leech news, and victorianweb.org.
Great.
Yeah. So there's some.
I feel enriched.
Yeah.
I do.
Or, yeah, enriched by bad science. So that's some bad science to start off.
Well, let's before we get all crazy on mm-hmm. Meriwether, I would like to give him credit for trying, right?
You know, some
of these crazy ideas succeed. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, and it's, I actually like to envision what the world could have been like had this worked, you know?
Really taken off.
Like, what if we were living in an age where things like the leech barometer or some of the other crazy ideas that take far too long to explain were like the predominant science and actually work. So today we were like, oh, I don't know what the weather's going to do tomorrow. I got to go get a fresh pail of leeches for my machinery, you know?
Well, I feel sure that in some parallel universe, perhaps they are.
Hopefully so.
Yeah.
But in this world, leeches are pretty much used for basically one thing.
Sucking blood.
Yep, sucking blood. That's what they're good for.
Well, let's do a little review of the leech. Okay, so it's not just a leech. Of course, there are many different species. There are hundreds, in fact, 650. Mm-hmm. And they range in size. It can be anywhere from 1 centimeter to a little less than a foot. And, of course, they live in and around water.
Yeah.
I have to say, when we proposed this podcast topic, I kept on thinking of that scene by the scene from Stand By Me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's my premier exposure to leeches.
That one's pretty gross. Stephen King also hit us with a pretty grotesque one in the novel It.
I don't remember that.
Well, I do, because it was pretty traumatic when I read it at like age 12 or something.
So some leeches, not all of them, feed on blood. Some of them are known to ingest a little plant material, decaying plant material specifically. Mm-hmm. And they really live just about anywhere there's water.
Yeah. They prefer fresh, but I've seen some reports of them living in pretty salty, popping up in some pretty salty water, too.
So how do they find their host?
Well, they apparently detect things like skin oils, blood heat, carbon dioxide that we're breathing out.
Blood and heat, you mean, right?
Blood and heat, not blood heat. That sounds like a...
I've never heard of that scientific term before.
It sounds like a really cheesy, like, 1980s cop film.
Oh, it does.
Blood heat.
And they sniff out some carbon dioxide, right?
Yeah. And they can, when you see them on skin, of course, they're kind of like little slugs and they don't have a lot of movement. But in water, they're pretty swift. They can just swim around all over the place. That's their habitat.
Yeah, with a nice little undulating motion.
Yeah. They have two suckers, one on each end. The rear suction cup helps the leech to move around on drier surfaces.
Okay.
Like, you know, your thigh or whatever. To attach the host. And the front suction cup, that's where you have a mouth with these three sharp jaws, which leave a Y-shaped bite.
Okay. I wasn't familiar with the shape of the bite.
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever had a leech attached to me.
I have not. Thank the sweet.
Yeah. I definitely swam in some waters where I could have gotten one, but yeah.
Yeah, so they don't feed all that often, but when they do, they eat an insane amount.
Yeah.
You cited a statistic in here that said four or five large leeches can drain the life from a rabbit in half an hour. And they're basically these blood balloons.
Yeah.
And they can reach several times their own body weight. Imagine that. You sat down to a meal and you just kept eating and eating and eating. I mean, I don't know how much you weigh now. You probably don't want to give that away on air, but just to eating several times your body weight.
Yeah, it would be pretty gross. I mean, it seems like, I mean, I think ticks do pretty much the same thing. It's like I guess a pretty common like parasite practice. And also things like, you know, monitor lizards, you know, other creatures where when you get that one meal, you just eat yourself silly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you can just spend the rest of the time digesting it.
Yeah.
And they eat for quite a while, too, sometimes. They can remain in place for as little as 30 minutes, but up to like 6 hours, just filling up on that blood.
Well, so the cool thing is their saliva has a host of really interesting components, and some of them are anesthetic and anticoagulants. And there's one in particular called Hirudin.
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 Yeah, it's like Shuriken in Street Fighter. Yeah.
So the host doesn't feel the incision, and you know their meal can continue uninterrupted without any blood clots, without the host noticing, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And they just keep gorging themselves on blood, and then bang-o, they get enough, and they roll their fat little selves off to digest the meal.
Yeah, I was really impressed by a couple of the things I ran across, because there are.
Oh, you're gonna do tell the Napoleon.
Oh yes,
one.
Yeah, definitely. Like, well, first of all, you can find pictures of this. They can attach to your eye, like some varieties.
That is really terrible.
And you have to be careful removing them because you like, oh, I pulled the leech off, but there's still like leech head in my eyeball, you know, kind of situation, which is just gross.
And they can attach to your throat. And I mean, of course they can attach to your.
Yeah, but not just the outside, but the inside, which there was this incident where Napoleon's troops were marching from Egypt across the Sinai Peninsula to Syria. And this is like 1799.
Mm-hmm.
They get really thirsty, right? So what do? You start drinking all the water you can find. Even when there are just a bunch of leeches in the water. So they ended up getting leeches inside their mouth and in their throat. And like some guys ended up sort of succumbing to blood loss. But other people, the leeches were just drinking blood out of the inside of their throat. And it was just like caused all this like swelling, and then they couldn't breathe. And it's grotesque.
That is a really terrible way to die. Imagine you probably didn't even know, you know? And would it be worse to know, I wonder, in that instance? Like, I don't know why I can't breathe, or I know why I can't breathe because leeches are, you know, sucking on my throat and slowly killing me. I wonder if knowledge is better or worse in that instance.
I don't know. You need something, like, really sharp to start munching on, I guess, like Wheat Thins or something, you know?
Some Cool Ranch Doritos.
Yeah.
If you can unlatch them. Of course, leeches as healers is not a new concept at all. We've been using them for ages.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, particularly in medicine. And why don't you tell us about the humors?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, you know, there's the old, you know, kind of like medieval idea that the body's ruled by four humors. And when these humors get out of balance, that's...
Did you look up what the four humors were?
Oh, I'm having trouble remembering what the four are. There's bile, and there's blood. And then there are two other kind of nasty things. I think it's maybe...
Okay.
No, can't remember.
Okay. So, but there are four of them.
Yeah. You can
roughly
look them up. Yeah. I don't know why I'm forgetting the other ones, but anyway, you know, these things get out of balance, and then they can cause everything from like schizophrenia to flatulence. You know, it's like any kind of medical problem. It's like, oh, well, your humors are out of whack. Let's throw some leeches at that problem.
I would like to go to the med school where you only have to learn about humors back in the day.
Yeah. The medieval, medical schools.
Yeah. Yeah, and so leeches, they pretty much threw leeches, or not threw, I guess they gently attached the leeches to any and all of these illnesses.
Well, right. Well, I guess one of the things, you know, which we'll get to in a second, is they're things that they can be very useful for in
indeed,
medicine.
Indeed. And we'll get to those.
Yeah. And I guess it's kind of like if, you know, you're in the Middle Ages, and especially if in the Middle Ages, there were areas where people were actually thinking about what they were doing, but they didn't necessarily have like the same scientific principles and standards to make sure you know what you're doing. So, you know, it's just kind of like throwing a lot of things at the wall and seeing what sticks, but not necessarily, you know, rigorously.
Get it? What sticks?
Yeah.
Like a leech?
Just throw a lot of leeches at a problem and see what grasps on.
No, but I mean, in a sense, it does make sense. If you have something that you know it works, or it, you know, maybe it works on, you know, when you have a pool of blood sitting there and a leech can suck that up, then, I mean, why not? You know, try to extend the boundaries of that particular therapy. And
yeah.
Maybe that's what they were doing.
Yeah, with just without regulation or, you know, or science necessarily keeping
it
in check.
It seems like it would be a fun time to be a medieval doctor.
Yeah. Generally, when you think of medieval medicine, you think fun times. but anyway, so yeah, but for the longest, the medicinal use of leeches was big business. Like 19th century governments even had to impose tariffs and trade bans. Because, like, people were using so many of them, it's like they were at the verge of extinction at times. There was even leech smuggling going on around the Russian border. So I love the idea as, blood-drinking parasites as currency.
Yeah, totally. And then the problem was that breeding efforts weren't all that successful. And so some areas, there were actually leeches were collected, you wrote, to the point of near extinction.
Yeah, and I wonder what it was like to be a leech collector. Like, was it basically you head down to the leech pond and you
stick your arm in?
I feel like I've read something about someone that was a leech collector, but it might have been something fictional.
Okay.
But
you'll have to enlighten us on Facebook or on Twitter when you find it. So in reality, the leeches probably had little effect on all of these different illnesses they were used to treat. And by the late 19th century or so, the bloodletting had fallen out of favor.
Yeah, because it wasn't working for most things, and it kind of became viewed as barbaric and gross.
Right, it just wasn't refined enough.
Yeah.
And, it wasn't doing most of what it claimed to do. But then there was a resurgence in modern medicine. And really central to this is
the substance in question is Hirudin again. And especially the medical leech, which is Hirudu medicinalis.
Say that again.
No, but it's just the medical leech from now on in this podcast.
Right. So something that I was thinking about when we were talking about doing this podcast was, okay, we have this resurgence of leeches in modern medicine. You know, why don't we just use drugs that are derived from the Hirudin, the polypeptide that can inhibit the enzyme thrombin from inducing blood clots? Why don't we just, derive substances from this in the lab and in fact, we do have drugs like this. So it just made me wonder if leeches would fall out of favor, because maybe you'd rather pop a pill than, slap a leech on.
Well, I think like some of the things working in its favor is I understand that Hirudin is, you don't get a lot of it from an individual leech if you try and harvest it.
Okay.
And I understand it's like synthesizing it is rather problematic and complicated as well.
Okay.
But also leeches are pretty easy to maintain. I think you have to like change their water a lot, but you can like mail them and stuff. I mean, not like in an envelope and like little, it's a special procedure.
Please don't mail us any leeches.
Yeah. But they're pretty hardy, and they're easy to apply, and it's like pretty easy to regulate. It's like you need to drain more blood, slap on another leech,
Well, in particular, surgeons have found them pretty useful.
And cheap, by the way. They're pretty cheap.
Right. Well, so surgeons have found them pretty useful for particular kinds of surgeries, like tissue grafting, or say I have to reattach a limb.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I might want to have some leeches as backups waiting to be used. And they're handy because, of course, they can remove the pools of congested blood from swollen areas that are going to interfere with circulation and that can cause tissue death eventually, after post-surgery.
Yeah, it all comes back to this a lot. First, the Hirudin, which is an anticoagulant, and then also the saliva also has these
local anesthetic properties
that also have, I think they can have sort of an antibiotic kind of reaction as well.
Yeah, the saliva is kind of a natural medicine chest of all sorts of interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And another interesting thing that you're talking about was that the leech is really handy in microsurgery.
Yeah.
And that's when you're talking about reattaching these really tiny veins, like in a child, for example.
There was a 1985 case where a Harvard physician was having a lot of trouble reattaching the ear of a five-year-old, and because there are all these little tiny veins and they keep clotting, and he was able to successfully use leeches to help it. Because, again, they're kind of like they're little pumps, You put them on and they cause blood to circulate and they keep it from clotting. I'm tempted to make some really convoluted metaphor about about economic resurgence, but I'm going to hold back. Apparently these are sometimes used with diabetics, because you end up with this, with thicker blood and there's a higher risk of, blood clots. So again, the Hirudin, can potentially be used to, promote better circulation, or at least in cases where it poses a serious threat.
And then you also came across a German gentleman, a researcher by the name of Andreas Michelson, mm-hmm. and he's out of, or at least he was at the time, out of the University of Duisburg-Essen in Germany. Apologies. I hope I hit that German pronunciation okay. But this gentleman was suggesting that leech therapy may lessen the pain and inflammation associated with osteoarthritis. And you guys know that's, you know, an inflammatory disease, and the bones can grind against one another because the cartilage has been worn down. It's incredibly painful.
Yeah.
There's a lot of daily pain that arises with this condition. And I was confused as to how leeches might tie in to osteoarthritis until I remembered that, you know, the saliva of a leech, it does have so many substances. And so the reason why leeches might be used in this instance isn't for the bloodletting, but rather for the anesthetic, the analgesic properties of that saliva. And so Michelson has done a couple of small studies. He did one, I think it had an N of 16 or so, and it was by no means definitive, but mm-hmm. He tested it out and gave the patients, half the patients, treatment with leech therapy, just a single treatment, and then half with whatever prescribed course of therapy was out at the time. And with the single treatment, they did, the osteoarthritis patients did report, in fact, some lessening of pain. And in fact, the effects from that one single treatment lasted for up to a month, I believe the study had said. So it's kind of interesting. And then he couldn't drop the leech and its promise for osteoarthritis. So he looked into it later, bigger study. I think it was in 2003, 51 patients. And same thing, your control group got whatever prescribed mm-hmm. course of therapy. A couple of people got leech therapy. And again, he found that people were reporting significantly less pain, although the effect dropped off, I think, after a week in this case.
Huh.
So it's kind of interesting. And even more interesting is Robert and I were talking about this podcast right before we went in the studio. You know, we like to nail all this down so tightly for you guys, listeners. And there's an editor here who overheard our conversation, and she grew really interested that leeches could be used for osteoarthritis, especially as she was allergic to painkillers. So we may have turned someone on at HowStuffWorks.com to using leeches.
Huh.
Which I thought was interesting.
We'll see. We'll have to follow up with her, see how that works out.
Yeah, maybe she could make a guest appearance on our show sometime.
Yeah.
Tell us how it's going.
Now, one thing to keep in mind with leeches is that apparently up to 20% of patients treated with leeches develop infections caused by
a bacteria that lives in the leech's gut.
Yeah, bacteria. I'm gonna try and say the bacteria by name.
Give it a shot. What you got?
Areomonas hydrophilia.
All right.
That's my guess anyway,
okay.
At that particular pronunciation. Anyway, so these infections are apparently not that huge a deal. They can be treated with antibiotics, but it's led some researchers to try and develop artificial leeches.
Okay.
Robot leeches, I guess, like little pumps and all. But one of the problems there is that, again, leeches are cheap. They're easy to use. If you need more, you can just slap on another one, and so the technology hasn't exactly picked up speed. Meanwhile, there are plenty. Like, I was looking at a website that supplies leeches medically. Weirdly enough, they have like a section for also like leeches for fishing.
Oh,
you
right.
Use them as bait. So it's kind of weird to get your medical supplies and your bait shop needs met by the same website. But you know, whatever. But it's pretty cool. Like they ship them out. They have a section where they show the little containers that they ship them in, and you can even, this is really cool, you can get like a special, like kind of the only way I can describe it is like a cookie jar for leeches. It's like a really like elaborate looking like container to keep your leeches in.
Okay.
And it looks really cool.
I don't see why leeches haven't caught on as pets.
Well, you know, they probably look pretty cool in a tank, like swimming around, you know?
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
I'm sure they would come and, you know, sit on your finger, no problem.
Yeah.
Maybe suck a little blood.
Yeah.
And if you have heart problems, think of the, you know, you could just let them nibble on your finger for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
What could happen?
Now, one thing you'd actually asked when we were going over this, you were like, well, do leeches ever, like, suck the blood out of other leeches after they're full of blood?
Right. So in the leech tank, in the leech jar.
And I looked it up, and apparently they have observed it with medical leeches. Like I think they were specifically seeing if it would happen. And it did. Like they let a leech feed, got it nice and swollen up with blood. I think they used cow's blood in the experiment.
Okay.
And then they put it in with some other leeches, and they were like, they went after it and they sucked it dry and killed it. So
it's a leech eat leech world.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, so far the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has cleared the way for medical leeches because they are available for treatment. And I think that was back in 2004, right?
Yeah, 2004. And it's interesting the way they carry it off. I mean, the very medical application of a blood sucking parasite. It's like they rinse the skin, clean it, and make sure it's nice and clean. And they also
you're talking about the leech therapy.
Yeah, to actually apply it for one of these methods. You can you need to put up like a gauze barrier to keep the leech from moving away from the area
you
want
it.
Yeah, you want it to feed on this particular area.
Okay.
And sometimes, it's kind of like getting your cat to do something, It's like they never want to actually do it. So you put the leech down. Sometimes the leech doesn't want to feed. So they have to draw a little blood from the patient, like with a needle, mm-hmm. and then like squirt it onto the area and start to get the leech riled up and interested in feeding. So that's kind of, you can lead a leech to blood, but it's difficult to make him drink, right?
Okay, if that hasn't impressed you enough about leeches and their various interesting qualities, we have a last story for you about leeches.
Yeah, and this is another tidbit that comes off of Mark's Bidelinia blog, which is, again, like it's all about leeches. And he covers like a lot of really cool stuff. Like, there's one entry he had just about like leeches in various mythologies and about how they tie in. So it's really cool stuff. But he related this one bit, and this was about 8 years ago, apparently. This guy like broke into this 71-year-old woman's home in Tasmania. All right. And he makes off with all this money,
okay.
A whole bunch of cash that she had like squirreled away, under a bed or something. And the assailant didn't realize that there was that a leech had attached to him, and it was like some sort of leech that's all over the island there, and so it fed and dropped off of him, and police were able to collect the leech and collect the blood, all right, and then get the DNA out of the blood and use that as DNA evidence against the guy who broke into the home. So
that's pretty amazing.
It's pretty amazing. Like my whole thing, I guess, with the leeches, though, it's kind of like, it's like, if you ever seen a movie or something where like a dude's a hacker,
mm-hmm.
he's like really learns how to hack a system. And then the authorities come and they're like, we should throw you in prison, but we have this job for you and only you can fix it. It's kind of like the leech is a parasite. So it's learned how to hack the human system for its own needs. But then
liking this analogy.
Yeah,
this is one of my more.
This one actually maybe makes sense. And then we've come around to him and said, hey, we've got a purpose for you. We've got a job that only you can do because you've learned how to manipulate the system. We need you to go in there and manipulate it for us. So.
Yeah. So I think the bottom line of that story is if you're afraid of being, robbed or burglarized, just keep a lot of leeches around the house.
Yeah.
And they'll catch the perpetrator, no problem.
Yeah. Live in the middle of a pond if possible.
So I think that wraps it up for leeches this week. What do you think about old listener mail?
Let's see what we have here. Yeah, I've got some mail here from Liam.
What did Liam have to say?
He wrote in about our lefties ruling the world podcast, and so he had some tidbits to share. He said, when I play racquetball, I find that I have a huge advantage over others. I only ever play against right-handed people, and they get really aggravated when they find that I don't have a backswing.
I bet they do.
I play mostly with my right, but instead of using a backswing, I switch hands to my left, so I never have to use a backswing. I don't know what a backswing is, but I assume this makes sense to people.
To racquetballers.
Yeah, to racquetballers. I wish I could do this with other sports as well, but I can't swing a bat, throw a ball, or really kick with my left. See, I can't do any of those things either. So, I don't know why I grew up this way, maybe mimicking people around me when playing games, but I like to think of myself as a right-handed lefty. So, there you go. That's pretty interesting.
Well, Liam, you can't see you, but I'm saluting you with my left hand right now. We also heard from Amy Claire, ambidextrous Amy Claire, who wanted to hear more about being ambidextrous in our left-handed podcast. Maybe we'll get one. We'll get around to that someday.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And then also Paul wrote in, and he says, in response to your call out, I'm a right-handed guitarist. Because, yeah, we were very interested in playing right-handed guitar. And I was also wondering, like, how do left-handed guitarists seduce women that they're trying to teach to play guitar.
You know? Yes.
But anyway, he says, I'm a right-handed guitarist, but I know people with left-handed guitars. On a right-handed guitar, you strum with your right hand and do the opposite on the left-handed guitar, which has always confused me. Wouldn't you think you would use your right hand for the more precise part of playing, fingering on the fretboard? And yet I have, and there is no way I can do it the other way with a left-handed guitar. And he says, anyway, love the show. Keep up the great work.
I would like to know what kind of music you're playing on that guitar, Paul.
Yeah.
That was a key detail. You left us out. You left us hanging.
I heard left-handed people have their own sinister secret form of music. That's what I've heard.
Lefties do rule. Hey, so if you guys want to tell us more about your left-handedness or leeches, send us an email at sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com or hook up with us on Facebook.
We're Stuff in the Science Lab, and on Twitter, we are Lab Stuff. So, yeah, let us know if you have had any experiences with leeches attaching to you, either with your knowledge or, again, without your permission.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.